Welcome to the Combat Chat Podcast. This is an Aussie-based show covering everything to do with Muay Thai, submission grappling, MMA boxing, and weird news the fight world has to offer each week. Now, it's time to combat sports and chill with your boys, Shane, Trent, and Hugh.
Welcome back, Combat Chat Podcast. I am solo today because Shane has caught the spicy cough, so I'm back in the bedroom studio that you may remember from lockdown, but it's still good to record from here, here and there, my place of where I sleep and do my job, and record podcasts sometimes. So it is super fucking hot here in Sydney. I'm not sure how it is in the Sunshine State, but we have got some guests on the other side of the line. Kind enough to dial in and talk to me while they're selling their house up in Queensland. Team Double Dose Muay Thai, Benji and Nakia Wright. How are you guys?
Good, man.
Good. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are things going up there on your end?
Yeah, we're doing all right. We're, like you said, selling our house at the moment while talking to you on here. It's all happening. We like to keep ourselves busy. Yep.
Multitaskers.
That's it.
So as we often do with sort of first-time guests coming on the show, I'm really keen to hear kind of like your guys' background. Like I said, you've got a lot going on that we're going to get stuck into in terms of running a gym, promoting a show. It's been kind of all systems go the last couple of years for you guys. But tell me, if you will, each of you separately, kind of like how you got into Muay Thai, what the journey's been so far, and what brought you to opening up a gym.
Yeah, right. So basically, I did a tiny bit back in like early 2009. I had a friend who trained at Matrix and I was just doing some stuff with him. And then we ended up taking off to America.
Yeah, my job took us to America, with like corporate kind of job.
In 2010.
And then we didn't want to go there and get fat because, you know, American food's delicious. And so Benj actually got into jiu-jitsu first.
Yeah, I was jiu-jitsu and MMA side first. Nakia went to Muay Thai, so I was training with the Gracie brothers over there and Javier Vasquez, and she went to Muay Thai.
I did like a really lame like boxer size class for a week, and then just was like, this is terrible, I need to find something like real. And then didn't really know anything about Muay Thai actually. Found a Muay Thai gym. Well, Benjamin told me, like, go do Muay Thai, so, you know, if that's the kind of thing you, like, want to get into. And then found a gym and it was Double Dose in America.
And that was one thing that I was interested to get into was because I have listened to a few podcasts and followed a bit Brian Dobler of Double Dose in the States. Yeah. I was interested to hear kind of, like, about sort of, I mean, at first I wasn't sure if it was just kind of like coincidental that it was two Double Doses, because I remember I would listen to podcasts back, is there a Double Dose in Australia? But I've heard a little bit more from kind of you guys' story now. So what was it like kind of training there? What was that experience like, and what kind of inspired you to bring Double Dose abroad?
Well, I think like from the second we walked in, like I could tell I was going to be hooked to it straight away. Like the Brian sort of like gave us his tour around the gym and told us all about the history of, you know, his gym with in relation to Muay Thai. And there's so much history there. It's like really amazing. Yep. And it was just something special about the environment. Like when you walk into a gym and you've never done martial arts before, or, you know, you're real nervous and you don't really know what to expect, you can sort of like expect that it's just going to be like this really scary, intimidating sort of place. What always like stood out was that it was really family friendly. Like we didn't feel uncomfortable at all. He kind of like just really broke down any of those like reservations about how it would be. Everyone was in uniform, you know, it was just like the place was super clean, well maintained, and it just felt like, oh, like anyone can do this. It's not just for like big scary fighters that, you know, you're gonna go there and get bashed. So, and obviously, like, he had a really good system in place. You start at beginner level and you work your way through up, you know, until eventually if you want to compete, you can. If you don't, you don't want to. Like, it's, you know, you're not forced to do anything. Yeah. And, like, I was just hooked from there on in, basically. Like, within months, I was, you know, like, I trained every day. I'd never wanted to leave the place. It sort of became our family. Like, our friends were all made there.
Yeah.
Because we were fairly new to the States, so we didn't really know many people. And like before we knew it, I was working, you know, in admin there. Benj was starting to learn how to teach classes. He started off teaching
tinies,
which is like 4-year-olds.
Yeah.
And we were just like completely engrossed into the whole like culture. I had picked up photography as a hobby, so I started photographing like ringside fights. And yeah, that was it. It was just basically we were in America for work, but outside of work, all we did was just like immerse ourselves in everything in the gym.
So from there, I suppose, what was it, just kind of like your kind of time with that career opportunity was up and it was time to come back to Australia? Was coming back to Australia something you know, were you homesick? What kind of brought you home?
It was a couple of things. Like we did think about getting a visa while we were there. But there was a lot of stuff going on in the States at the time. So
yeah.
It was more like there was a lot of the South American people that were there illegally that were getting them at the same time. So they were handing them out. And we kind of wanted to start a family as well. And we wanted to come back here to do that. So it was kind of like things that we were wanting to do, you know. So we thought it was time to come back. I think we were there for close to 4 years or something, 3.5 years.
Yeah, 3.5 years, yeah.
Yeah.
And from, I guess, a couple of questions I have from that sort of time. It's funny to me that kind of like, or interesting rather, that you ended up over in the States and that was kind of where you got sort of immersed in Muay Thai, because like when we talk to people who are involved in the American Muay Thai scene, it's kind of like the uptake has been sort of not as good as it is with like MMA and stuff like that. Like I think the States is very much like a developing Muay Thai community. So do you think you kind of just like, I guess, struck gold and found like a gym with a really strong Muay Thai lineage over there? And I guess, you know, mentioning Naki that you were doing a bit of ringside photography and stuff like that. How did the scene over there compare to the scene when you got back to Queensland?
Yeah, so what was really interesting was we were there at a really good time, like that 2010 to around 2013. It was like Muay Thai really blew up there, and even though in hindsight compared to Australia it's still very behind, at the time for America it was a really good time that it was growing.
Was that like the Muay Thai Premier League kind of
era? So we got to be around all of that when that was happening. So it was like a really, really big era for Kevin Ross. When I was doing the photography, I actually got to photograph Sanchai versus Kevin Ross.
Awesome.
And I like had no idea at the time, like the caliber of like that fight. Like it was just because we'd only known what we had seen there. It was a great time, but everyone was super welcoming. Like, what was really amazing was, I started fighting over there, and as an amateur, like my first fight was like, it was a proper amateur fight, but it was inside a gym. It was kind of like, it was like very low level, like exhibition style, but full rules and sanctioned and everything.
Yeah.
But like you'd fight and then people would come up to you after and be like, "Whoa, it's so amazing that you fight. Like, this is so cool." Like the crowd's just super supportive of everybody, even if it was your first time ever in there. And the community itself was like very supportive of each other. There wasn't too much like politics and trash talking about each other's gyms and stuff like that. Everyone was just like, just really cool and welcoming. It was different. And then when we came back here, I was surprised at the kind of the rubbish and the politics that can come with Muay Thai here, because there it was just everyone was just genuinely there to support each other. Like we'd go to shows and talk to Kevin and all these top level Muay Thai fighters, and just had no, like, they were just everyday people, you know, because they'd be at the shows, and Lion Fight sort of booms during that time as well. Like, that sort of started to get really big.
It was
interesting. We had no idea what we were living in, I guess, at the time, until we came back and reflected later, and we're like, fuck, we were there at like such a good time.
I think the golden era almost.
We kind of, when we came back and tell people like some of the stories of people we trained with and where we went and everything like that, we kind of like, fuck man, I wish we'd taken more note of it, you know. They were just like people to us, and you know, we kind of just didn't really talk about it that much because it was just a, you know, it was just an everyday occurrence over there for us,
like,
know?
Tiffany Van Soos, we watched her from like she was amateur turning pro, like we watched her first pro fight there.
I think I had shots races with her after her first fight and Lion Fight in Vegas.
Miriam Nakamoto, Miriam versus Julie Kitchen, like
massive fight.
We were actually there working, so Ajahn Brian, the Muay Thai in America show when we were there, was like everyone came over for it, training at Double Dose, and it was Andy was there, Coke, Kai Hollenbeck, like there was just people from all over the world that were there. We were there at the perfect time, you know.
Was a big era, hey. For American Muay Thai.
They used to bring like Thailand team over as well. So like I remember it was like four or five of them came over from Sasi Prapa all together. And they used to do that a fair bit because there still is a few Thais there. Running gyms like in Southern California. So yeah, they sort of would bring teams over and that, which was really good. And yeah, some big fights. That Julie Kitchen era was huge too. She was there, like came over a few times.
And I guess like that was a time, I think one that stands out to me, I think, is that Kevin Ross versus Sanchai kind of fight, because I think with the performance that Kevin Ross put on against Sanchai, it was something of an eye-opening thing where it's like, look what, you know, an American produced Muay Thai fighter can do at the highest of high levels. And I have seen there was a lot of really good like videography going on at that time, like the story was getting told quite well, and you mentioned it where I think from as a way outsider just kind of looking in at this, it does, as you said, it felt like the United States as kind of like a, you know, a developing and a community of Muay Thai that people didn't think of as being, you know, at that elite level. I think everyone kind of couldn't afford to be against each other, like that's almost a luxury. Like if you're able to look at kind of, if you've got enough thriving gyms around to be able to kind of turn against each other, obviously the scene's doing quite well, whereas like everyone there kind of had to just be like, let's invest in American Muay Thai, not me or not my team, but let's all just kind of like try to push our fighters to the top. And as you said, there were some amazing matchups then.
Even the when I got into the photography, I had my first camera, it really wasn't great. Not many skills, and all I knew was Muay Thai, and then I sort of knew how to use a camera, so I was trying to join the two together. And a couple of the photographers were like, I managed to get a ringside pass for one show, and instead of pushing me out and being like, who's this new kid on the block, they were like, oh awesome, like come sit here, were showing me tips how to do stuff. Like I was talking to them after and editing, and they'd be like, this was Jeff Dohilo and Serrano and stuff. Like these guys are top level photographers, and they were back then too, and they were just like letting this amateur like kid sort of come along and try to learn the ropes and using up one of their spots ringside, and there'd be five of us ringside crammed in, and there was no, like we'd all share the photos around, no one ever charged for photos, so it was like everyone just got shared all their photos for free. All supporting each other or helping each other. And like it was then when I like when I actually had my first amateur fight, a couple of them came and photographed me because they were like excited that I was gonna fight. Like it was, it was wild.
Real community.
Yeah, that's it.
And so You kind of, I suppose, like kicked off your career in real. Well, I mean, I guess it's interesting that like you went to the States for kind of like a corporate kind of job opportunity, but now, you know, kind of Muay Thai is the job to a degree. Muay Thai is the job. So was that the decision, like when you decided to come back to Australia? Was it like we're going to really go all in on Muay Thai for our lives now, or it just kind of snowballed? No.
So I had, when I was over there, I was teaching jiu-jitsu classes and I was teaching Muay Thai. So my story for Muay Thai is a bit different to Nakia. I was doing MMA and jiu-jitsu and I was teaching them. And then I kind of got thrown into it. They went to a seminar about teaching stuff with Ajahn Brian, and she went to DC and trained the Secret Service with him. So she went there into that, and they can't
the back. Secret Service.
Yeah,
yeah.
We've had quite the journey, mate. Yeah, and then I kind of got a phone call saying, "Oh yeah, by the way, you're going to be teaching kids classes at my gym now." And I went, "Okay, sweet." So it was just that week they started the kids program, and I was in there. So I just had to kind of figure it out and go from there. So my journey's been a bit more about the coaching side of it.
Yeah,
I enjoy that a lot more than the fighting side of it. I've never really been interested that much in fighting. So, but when we came back, because of we worked in Double Dose, and Nakia was working at her job, and I was working in the jiu-jitsu gym at Harvey's gym. And it just kind of burned me out a bit. So when I came back, we actually took a break for a while, didn't we?
Yeah, we took a little break. We actually, we'd planned to start a family. So I was pregnant not too long after we came back. So we just focused on that for a little bit.
I imagine that requires some focus. I've never done it, but yeah, it seems time consuming.
Takes up a bit of your time, yeah.
Yeah.
And then also I think we're training at home. Like just
we're still training and we were still going down to Boonchu at the time as well and training.
Oh, yep.
We were still training, but I just stopped training people. And then it kicked off. We had like a studio at our house. We turned the garage into a full studio. And I started off with Brendan Novak Brasic, who used to live around the corner. So his parents used to own Fight World. They just sold it. So that's how I got back into it. I started training him and then he started fighting. And then we went from there and I ended up with like 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 11. And then it was time to open the place.
Yeah. He was just basically doing all these PTs in the garage. I had been training with Angie. Gemma and Harry are about the same. We're born around the same time. So we were sort of pregnant at the time. So we met them through the fact that Brian knew Angie from being in the States and stuff. So, that was sort of like it was kind of convenient because she understood being a new mum and stuff like that. So I had planned to get back in the ring, but we're just doing everything out of the house, but still doing these corporate jobs. Like we both had full-time corporate jobs.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't really ever the plan. It just kind of happened.
Just kind of
like as far as like working in Muay Thai again. Yeah. I definitely had always planned to go back fighting, but we didn't know really how that was going to happen. Like Ben was just going to train me and we were just sort of winging it.
Yeah.
He got enough people that were just like, man, you need to open the gym. Like stop doing this in your garage. Like let's just do this for real.
Yeah.
We thought, well, at least we'll have somewhere. Actually, no, you had your first fight out of the garage, hey?
Yeah, I basically trained myself and then I fought on Wayne and Angie's show. So I was training people and Nakia's like, you've got to experience it.
You need a fight.
You've got to experience it. You got to fight Muay Thai. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, sweet, no worries. So I think at the time I ended up fighting at like 74 kilos or something crazy like that.
And he was training training with Jun Lee.
So I do pads with him and then I just trained myself in a garage for it. So
because I was like,
that on Cage Muay Thai?
Oh, so no, that
was his second
fight. That was my second fight, yeah. So that was I had one and then Angie said, see how you go. And if you beat this guy on my first fight, they put me in Cage Muay Thai for my second one. So I jumped straight into CMT for my second fight.
It was funny because I was like, you can't corner fighters and train fighters without knowing what it feels like you've got to know the like nerves and all that process and how hard it is once you get in there and like all that sort of stuff. And then like fight day come around and he didn't get nervous, like he didn't go through any of that, and I was like, I'm like, I swear these nerves are real, like you need to understand this. you know, and he was just like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, he just didn't really.
Just couldn't understand it. Yeah. I didn't have any nerves or any emotions about it. So I don't know.
Just kind of felt.
I felt a bit of
business as usual. Yeah.
I kind of felt comfortable. And then from there, we just kept going for a while. And then it just came to the point where we opened the gym and the gym got really busy really quick. And then I was training with Peasy at the time. And I think I was supposed to fight. I had a fight lined up with Jonathan Aiolu, maybe.
No.
Okay.
I don't know.
Oh, it was someone anyway. It was on Ian Bronson's show. And then I got cut in one of my fights and I had stitches and it kept opening for like 8 months or whatever. And then we just decided, like, I didn't have time to train. The gym was too busy. I had too many of my own guys fighting. So we just, we just agreed, like, what do you want to do? I said, I want to train people. So we just decided to stop there.
And even like when he was fighting, like we were all like kind of making him do it, like his team. Mm. We were like, yeah, you got to fight. Like, it's so exciting when you fight, everyone would come and he'd sell a shitload of tickets. And like it was always a fun night, but he still never really cared about it. He was just like, like, I get more excitement when my guys fight, like not when I'm doing it myself. Like, he didn't, just never really went through that like process of like all that excitement and those nerves and that feeling when you fight, like what makes people sort of love that thrill.
Yeah.
He never really experienced it. It was just like, I don't really care about it.
Like, yeah, it was funny. Like Benny, I would train with Ben Marnie. So we were good mates. And we would fight on the same show a couple of times and they call it the Benjamins. And he would be the one after all the fights he's had that I would have to keep an eye on him so that he wouldn't disappear from the show. He would get so nervous. And I'm like, I don't know. I just don't know. I just never got nervous about any of it. So
do you think that lack of nerves or that lack of, you know, lack of emotion towards it was that, do you think you're kind of just a bit more built to be a trainer and maybe that it was like the fights for you where you were just kind of getting it done to get the experience, but you weren't attaching too much to that actual in-ring experience? You were just kind of like, nah, let's give this a go.
Yeah, it wasn't even that. Like, I think it was these guys who pushed me to do it. And then everyone just started saying like, okay, you seem to be pretty good at this. Let's go again. And I'm like, okay, whatever. Like,
I definitely like watching him now as a coach, he gets different, like he gets emotional about his fighters fighting and nervous.
Yeah.
And like really like be spending a lot of headspace on how leading up to it, after it, like, you know, if anything goes wrong, like obviously he's blaming himself, like where did he go wrong? Why did his fighter lose a fight or whatever, or experiences all the highs of their wins with them. So it's definitely like, it's like he gets that same thrill we get from being in the ring, but as the coach.
And do you find like, because that was going to be my next question, is like, do you get nervous when your guys are fighting? Is it, do you have, now that you've got more guys fighting and I suppose now that you're in the corner probably for like higher stakes fights sometimes, do you kind of get a feeling in your stomach and you're like, oh, that's what everyone meant when they talk about the pre-fight nerves? Like, that's it.
And man, I think the last year, like 2021 was a big one for me because I kind of was like, I wasn't trying to like play with the level of like Peasy and all those guys, but I kind of understand like my position in it all. Like, I'm just new to it and kind of sat back and looked at all of the guys we've had, and every single one of the boys that fight in our team is I've kind of built them from day one.
Yeah.
Like, no one else was from any other gym. You know, we're starting to get guys that have got 10 fights and, you know, they've won 9 of them. And, you know, now working with Billy and Torrin, I think we went 7 from 7 out of his last fights and stuff like that. And I think like, you know, I started last year was, you know, we're doing our own show and we're winning 4 from 4 and 6 from 6 and 4 from 4 again up in Cairns. And I'm like, fuck man, we're doing all right with this stuff, you know? And then I get that feeling of like, probably what you guys feel when you fight, you know, it's like an overwhelming feeling. I think on CMT when we went 4 from 4, I was fucking nearly ready to break down, I think. On MTL, yeah. I was like, man, we're doing this shit, you know, we're getting all right at this, we're starting to play this game, starting to figure it out a little bit, you know. So
I'm interested to hear as well, like you mentioned that you have built a lot of fighters from the ground up, and then of course once you get guys, you know, there's getting a guy ready for his first fight and then there's crossing that kind of 10, 11, 12 fight barrier where you start to get into those higher levels. Yeah. For yourself as a trainer, especially when if you get a bunch of guys in and they're all kind of at that same novice experience level, what's the transition like from getting people ready for those first couple of fights to then starting to prepare them to fight at that higher level? Are you doing things that, like, is it a bit like, you know, we just carry on the same path, keep chipping away, or are you doing things to continue to develop to prepare for higher level fights? What's that like on your side?
I think for myself, I spend a lot of time like watching fights, and I kind of been lucky in the sense of like having Ajahn Brian there and also Peasy. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Peasy spent a lot of time when I was training for fights, kind of like mentoring me at the same time. So I kind of had an understanding of like what I had to do with people and like work with them, not try and change them. So I think all my guys, that the reason why they're doing so well is because I'm just working with the person individually, not trying to change them to like a specific style.
You're not bringing a mold for them to just kind of like fit into.
So, I mean, we've got some guys in there that are awkward as shit. He was orthodox, hurt his shoulder in his first fight and then went southpaw. And I'm like, okay, cool, let's work with that. And now he's 5-0. Like, I work out that I work with them individually at what they're good at and then just build them from there, you know? It seems to be working. And it's the same with Billy. Like, Billy's already built, but just giving him like a bit more of what I understand on top of his game is just helping him, you know, just studying who he's fighting. And I spend a lot of time watching the higher level fights and where people lost more than how people won.
Yeah.
So why did the person lose and how could it have been done differently is a big thing of what I watch, like high level Thai fights and stuff like that.
Yeah. And interested to touch on as well, like we talked about a little bit before we started recording, you are working in a little bit of a clique with Billy, who's running Billy Badass Muay Thai, as well as my friend Tyron O'Brien, who running the show at Snake Pit. How did that come together, you guys kind of starting to put your heads together and sort of team up? And kind of what role do you play for those guys?
So I manage both of them and train Billy. So, and with Tyron, we just do stuff through like video.
Yep.
So stuff we need to work on for specific fights and stuff like that. And then he's just a workhorse. Like, you can tell him, I need 900 left kicks on the bag, and he would do 1,800 of them and just say, you said 900, so I'll do 1,800, you know, and need to get stronger. So then he does CrossFit 4 days a week just to throw that in there with the other 200 hours that he trains, you know. Billy's kind of like a divorced child. I spend 1 week up there, he spends 1 week down here. So it's like, but I think Tyron came about when I had done, I did aggression with Scott Moss.
Yep.
And we had the UK team come over on that. And Billy Ankins was supposed to fight and he got injured. So I needed someone straight away. And then Tyron commented on it. And I'm like, all right,
as always.
Yeah,
let's bring him down. And he actually ended up.
Never met him before.
No, I never knew him before. And he ended up staying at our house. And it worked out perfectly for him because he wanted something from us. He wanted to know how we built our gym the way it was. So that's the reason why he took the fight. He wanted to learn what we did with our gym.
So he just needed needed some visibility.
Yeah. And then he ended up winning that Commonwealth title that we had on there. And it was good.
It's really weird with Tyron because we met him and Benj was like, oh, like we've got this fighter coming in, you know, low budget show. So he's staying at our house. It's like, oh, okay, cool. Like, don't know who he is, but, and then he arrived, Benj brings him in the house. He goes, I got to go. Like me and Scott got to go start setting stuff up for the show. See ya. And just like left Tyron in the house with me. And I was just like, okay, cool. Like, I don't know. And within 5 minutes, I felt like I'd known the guy for like 10 years.
Yeah.
Like, and I was like, this is weird. Like we had so much relatable, like just the way we saw things in life and things we'd been into and stuff was just so similar. And he was just so easy to get along with. Like really, you can just tell how genuine he is without like, you know, immediately.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this is weird. Like we don't have, our circle is small. And it was just, it just felt like family straight away. And then you know, the next night he fought, like the two nights later he fought, it was the biggest crack up the whole night. We were all just laughing.
Yeah.
Because he had no idea. He didn't know what it was like to get his hands wrapped because he'd been wrapping his own hands for fights.
Crazy.
He didn't know what it was like to hit pads before a fight because he just would shadow box and then go fight. Like, he didn't know what any of this. He was like, I feel like I'm royal. Like, this is just, you know, like, I don't have to carry my own bucket. I don't have to do this.
You're he's like, what do you need me to do? I'm like, nothing, dude. Just like, sit there and relax. And he got massaged and he's like, oh, so this is what the Thai rub down's all about.
And then like when he got in the ring, like he listened to our instructions, like we would be calling for stuff and he'd be doing it. We're like, well, how is this happening? Like, this guy's never had a proper corner. And like, he was saying after, he's like, I can't believe I listened. I've never known what it's like to have instructions. Yeah. Like, yeah. It was like, and it's amazing how he had gotten to where he had gotten.
Just by teaching himself.
Like, basically doing that himself.
Phenomenal.
So it would be safe to say 99% of fighters, you wouldn't trust them to go and handle their own camps and train themselves and stuff.
Yeah.
Any other fighter, there's no way. Like, anyone else I've worked with, you can't treat them the same as Torin. Torin just does it. But then Billy came about. So Billy was another interesting story. I get a phone call from Torin. So I'd been messaging Billy back and forth every now and then because he wanted to open his own gym and he wanted to do this. And Tyron and I were kind of just like pushing. Yeah, just do it, man. Just do it. You're badass Billy Coulter, man. Just fucking do it, you know. So he was working at the same time. And then I get a phone call from Tyron. Hey, bro, you busy tonight? I went, why? What's going on? He goes, oh, Billy just took a four-man on Beast Championships. Can you go and help him? I was like, oh, okay. So who's he fighting?
He'd been out a while then as well, hey.
Not for 3 years.
Yeah. 3 years, like, I didn't think it would be quite long. Yeah.
I'm like, what is he doing? Has he even been training properly? I don't even think he's been training. And he's like, oh, I don't know. He just took the fight anyway. I'm like, oh, okay. So how did this come about? And he goes, I told him to do it. I was like, all right. So then I had to go down there. I didn't know much about him. Obviously watching him fight and stuff like that around when I was in there. And
We met him at the fight show.
I had to corner him at the fight show, get him ready. And that's when I met Billy properly.
Officially met him. Yeah. That was
crazy.
Yeah. So then that journey started after that. We were like, what are we doing? And he's just like, bro, I need some guidance. I need this. Can you work with me? And I'm like, yeah, sweet. So we did one. The next fucking fight we did was Albert.
Yeah. So
we got ready for Albert on that one. You know, and we both learned about each other in that one. There were some things that, you know, Billy sat and waited too long and I'm yelling at him in the corner. And then we kind of learned a little bit about each other and that, and then we've just gone from there. So
that's a high caliber to start working with a fighter at. Yeah. Right? Like it's a high level to cut your teeth on like the Alberts of the world.
Yeah. That was a good fight. And I think if he stuck to the game plan that we had in play, we would have got that one. We only just lost on split points, but
it was a close one. Yeah.
It was a good fight. Yeah. He just kicked up that little bit too late.
Yeah.
And he knew he did. He just sort of, he felt he didn't. It was funny because the Beast one sort of happened so quickly and he was sort of, everything was a bit strange. I don't think he really had time to register it, but the
no Albert, time to overthink it.
Yeah. And it was like the Albert one, it was like, okay, like he's done a camp now. That was more like the real return. And he said he felt the rust in that one.
Yeah.
Because the first one it was three rounds in the first one. He didn't really have time to, like you said, he couldn't really overthink anything. Yeah. But that one, he sort of had to go back and then get the rust off a little bit. So he just sort of kicked into gear a bit too late. It was an amazing little friendship was born, I guess, from the three of them.
Yeah, and now we're kind of
inseparable now.
Yeah, now you can't stop us. I think we talk between the three of us about 100 times a day and a lot of eggplant emojis and stuff like that. And
just classic banter.
Yeah, that's it, pretty much. And then we've kind of been a bit closer lately with all the stuff with Torin and his daughter. So,
yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I don't know, we're like brothers, man. I feel like I'm closer to these guys than I am to some of my actual family. So,
often how it goes within the sport, eh?
Yeah.
Kind of get a new surrogate family.
Yeah. And we're so far away from each other. Like, I know Billy's sunny coast, but every time we go up there, it's like 2 and a bit hours. And then Tyrone, we try and get down. He tries to get down here. We go up there and stuff like that, you know, just to hang out. But he's fucking in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
We try and get him to the Gold Coast all the time. Just get him to move. It'd be easier.
He's a rocky lifer. So do you think it's kind of like the I guess, motivation or that sort of brought both of those guys to work with you? Is because they're both running their own gyms, right? And you mentioned that Tyrone was really running the show for himself. Like, he is effectively not only self-taught in Muay Thai, but also teaching other people. So he's like the, you know, he learns it, he just passes it straight on. So that's a crazy kind of environment to be in to sustain a fight career of your own, like just learning on the job. Billy, of course, has like a bit of lineage behind him in that, you know, came up under Joe Hilton, and but had shifted to running his own gym and was in a position to run the show. Do you think it was just those two guys had kind of their working environments but needed, you know, another mind to kind of help him run the show and share ideas with?
Yeah, 100%. They bounce stuff off us all the time with the gym. Mm-hmm. You know? They've come down. They, you know, we help them with heaps of stuff. You know,
Torin always jokes around. He's just like, you guys do it first, and then when let me know it works, then I'll do it. We'll do here. It,
yeah. Tell me how you did it, and then I'll do it here. Yeah, but that's the whole thing about it, isn't it? Like Muay Thai is like helping everyone build it. Like, there's no secrets behind what we've done. We help anyone who asks. You know. We work hard to get what we've got. We've made heaps of mistakes along the way, but yeah, we've got a fucking wicked successful gym that's the coolest environment I've ever seen in my life. And to help those guys do it as well, we've got no problems helping them. We'll give them whatever they need.
Yeah. It's a bit like you talked about what the environment was like when you were in the States. Just like, if I have an idea here, you can have it. Like, let's all succeed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Brian was very much like that with us. Like, even though we had started working at his gym, like he was always sharing ideas. Nothing was ever closed book where it was just for him.
Yeah.
And no he secrets. Taught us so much. And even now, if we've ever got questions, we can message Brian and say, hey, we're stuck with this. What do you think? And he'll drop everything to help us out. And so we had only really known that was the way to do things. And then, and so when people like Billy and Torin came along, we're like, well, this is what you do, right? Like, you share this. There's no point in like the whole fucking tall poppy thing in Australia and not wanting other people to succeed. Like, the bigger and better and more successful Muay Thai is, and the more people training Muay Thai, the better it is for this sport. So like, there's no need to keep everything a secret.
If other gyms are producing, I think it's that weird idea is people don't really know how you're supposed to behave because it's fighting. Mm-hmm. But it's like, if your gym is producing higher level guys and better stylists, and then my guys go and fight your guys, my guys get better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, what's the point? Like, people, I think it's not everywhere, because there is a lot of really good, you know, community in Australian Muay Thai, and it varies a lot in different areas and stuff like that, but there is a lot of tall poppy syndrome too, that it's like, what do you gain from being the one good gym on the block, like, you know, and just winning a bunch of squash matches? What does it do for you?
And having like all of the high level fighters go to one gym, that's crazy.
Yeah,
like, whether they're gonna run out of fights soon, right? They can't fight each other.
Exactly. And like, I almost think as well, if that's what you want, like, you know, I know I've got a good formula, I'm going to keep it a secret, let all of you guys just, you know, stay poorly informed. What are you really preparing your guys for? To win locally? Because they'll get exposed when they didn't have, like, you know, if you're really just that concerned with being better than just the other gyms down the road, what happens when you get... Are you not trying to prepare your guys for bigger opportunities beyond your little network? And they'll get found out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there was nothing being done to sustain a quality environment in your own backyard. You just kind of squash all your early fights, but you're actually ill-prepared for anything above that.
I think it's funny, like, I look at what, when I said, like, we produced all of our fighters, like, we've got our next generation of fighters coming through as well. So I'm a big, big believer in, like, if you're producing quality, it will continue to come around. And I know I'm only young to it. Like, I've only had this is the year number 6 for the gym, and I have no big expectations of myself of winning world titles as a coach and all that kind of shit. That'll be like 20 years down the track. You know, I know my role in that, but I think like, I look at some gyms and I see like a lot of fighters from different places, and they kind of migrate to the one spot, but there's no next generation.
Yeah.
There's no next generation coming up, you know?
So what, yeah, like if we're not sharing the knowledge and or not pushing the sport to grow as a whole, then what happens when all the current really good fighters are done?
Yeah. You there's know? No, like but a lot, yeah. A lot of gyms don't have that next generation coming through with the 0 to 5 fights or the teenagers that are getting ready for that, you know, that step into the ring and all that kind of stuff, you know. It's like there's a lot of high level fighters in gyms these days and there's nothing underneath it, you know. You've got guys with 30, 40, 50 fights and then the next person under them is no one.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you feel as a trainer that there's a difference and like where kind of like some of the arties is like, it's one thing to have the knowledge to produce a high level fighter. Like there's a lot of guys that can do that, but then it's a whole nother ball game is creating a high level ecosystem, because like the way I look at it is one trainer really realistically in that, you know, just directly through their own knowledge probably can't produce a team of 20 fighters at all different levels. Cause what, like there's not enough hours in the week. You're taking all those people on pads. It's like, it's, you've got to bring a fighter up, and not just teach some skills but instill a certain value set in them so they're passing that down the line.
Then
you've kind of, it starts to develop with a trainer's oversight, it kind of starts to develop itself. Is that kind of like how you see your gym coming together?
Yeah, it's coming together. So like all my guys that fight, you know, from the 5 to 10 plus fights, they've all been trained from day one that they can hold pads for each other.
Yeah.
And so they're basically training each other all the time because we've got so many people in there that I can't hold pads for all of them. And then when it comes to three weeks out, I kind of like, we've got 3 or 4, 5, 6, 7 people fighting on a show. Then I start working with them one-on-one, no one else touches them.
Yeah. So,
but they basically can, all of those guys have been taught that they can teach fundamental classes. They can hold pads for fighters. They can do everything with each other at the same level that you would want to do it with them, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's the difference in what we're trying to achieve there. And then we've got, you know, for that reason, we've got kids fight team that's just absolutely smashing it as well. You know, we've got 7-year-old kids that have had 5 fights, a 10-year-old that's had 14 fights now, like, and same thing, the 14-year-old, he's 11 now, Lewis A, 11, he can teach the kids fight team. It's just the way we brought the gym through that process.
Yeah, and like you'll just never produce that kind of volume if you have that mentality of like, the only way that these fighters learn is if I teach them one-to-one. You'll have a team of one.
Yeah, that's it. You'll have like one or two people, that's it. And don't get me wrong, I thought of that in the start, you know, oh, it's me, I've got to do it all. And I tried to do it when we had Kim there and stuff like that. Like that's when it changed for me. Like Kim was then holding pads for Nakia. Kim was holding pads for other fighters. Nakia was holding pads for Kim. Like, and I'm like, oh shit, this works way better than me trying to do everything myself, you know? And then, yeah, I just kind of thought about it, a different process, and then just ended up with what we've got now.
It helps with the culture too, because if Benj is doing it all and he's the only one holding pads for fighters, then it creates entitlement with the fighters as well. So, then they can feel like, you know, unless they've got Benj training them personally the entire camp, they're not going to be ready, and that's not the truth. But now that we've got this sort of system in place and some good quality other like coaches coming up, you know, who are also sort of like learning as they go how to be better coaches, then then it's like, cool, we're just all here to collectively get ready for fights as a team. And that varies in how we get ready, whether it's drills, sparring, clinching, doing pads, whatever. But it's not just dependent on one person, and no one's entitled to just get Benj, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's more of a team environment, I think. Like
The
team now all train regardless. If they don't have a fight coming up, they're still there a week after they get the week off after their fight. And then they're back in the gym to support the other guys.
Mm. Some of them don't even take the week off though. They're like,
no, like 2 days and they're
2 days and they're back in. Yeah. Like they just want to get back in there because the environment's just on another level. Like they just want to be in there. They've got to help that next person. It's just the way they are. So
Yeah, I think we've got a pretty similar vibe in our gym. Like, I especially, like, I'm always straight back after I fight because, like, I don't know what else to do.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I finish work in the afternoons and it's just time to go to the gym. Like, and it's to the point of, like, I think it's a good, like, it's really difficult for a busy fight team to get developed. Like, a good example is, like, you know, one of the top gyms in Australia, if not the top, is, of course, Riddler's gym. They have like 300,000 fighters. Like, of course, Stone Reese is not training all of them. Like, he's working with everyone, but of course, there's got to be an element of, like, of teamwork there, or there's literally not enough hours in the week to train all of those people. That it's like, if you are really passing on high level knowledge, it can be passed on to someone who can pass it on. And you create, and I always see in kind of like, sort of like the social media and stuff like that from Double Dose, the word family gets used a lot, like in your kind of like value system and stuff like that. And you really do have to build that family culture where people feel a responsibility. Like, I know if I've had a fight on Saturday and it's Tuesday, provided, you know, my body's feeling good, which sometimes it's not. After my last one, it wasn't. I'm like, all right, I've got in my mind, okay, these four people, though, are fighting in 2 weeks. So, like, you know, it's not a matter of I can just go and disappear. They were helping me when I was getting ready, and I now have to come back in. Not I have to, like, I have to go back in and help. Like, I want to be there.
Yeah,
and be an extra pair of hands, whether it's holding pads or even just like, it matters a lot if people are around, like, demonstrating that they give a shit. Like, I think when someone's having their first five fights, like after my last fight, the first couple of days of the week, I came into the gym and I just sat on the couch and just watched the guys train. That was pretty much all I could do. But I think it does, when I was a guy, like, I've had 30 something fights, I think. Like, when I was having my third or fourth fight, it would have meant a lot to me to have one of the more experienced guys in the gym just being there to give me a couple of pointers and just kind of make them feel like the fight sort of matters. And I don't think it should be something that you can't force that. It either matters to you or it doesn't. But, like, you should care about your mates.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And we've had it the other way, like early days trying to find our feet and figure it out. We've had where the team was not as supportive, and it's horrible because you do feel like you have to be, like, forcing people to be there, and then the vibe's not good and it spreads and you can feel it. So we haven't...
It's contagious, right? Like, if someone shows up, and it's not a matter... It's like I said, if you say to someone, you have to be back in the gym on this day, they might come, but they're not going to do any good. You can tell when someone has to be there.
Yeah, exactly. And that's... Yeah, we felt what that's like, especially when we were a smaller team, and we just had some of the wrong people, and we're just trying to figure out, you know, we tolerated too much and stuff and just didn't really know, like, we were just learning, you know. And it's a world of difference when that culture is right. It's like, it's so important, and it shows in the results. Like, the wins are coming so much more frequently now that we have that correct.
And do you guys think, when it comes to kind of, like, what I always say when I talk about, like, gym culture is that, like, it's honestly not even so, like, the culture is something, there are steps to take to foster it, but really, like, if you don't have the passion for it and you're not really, like, putting in the care, you can't fake culture. Like, you can't manufacture it. Do you think, I often hear kind of a sentiment from gym owners, especially when they're talking about when culture is a really important part, they talk, and I was having a conversation like this recently where I think people say when you're early in running a gym, you're working to keep people, like trying to make them comfortable and not make them want to leave. Whereas, like, once you gain that little bit more confidence, you can't look, if you're not positive for the culture, I'd kind of rather you just step out, because someone else will come back that positively adds to what we do. And then more people will follow. Whereas if you stay and you kind of just like a little bit of an infection to the culture, you probably might even make other people not want to be there so much. Is that kind of something you've experienced?
And that's what I mean by, like, early days, we sometimes tolerated too much. We knew someone was toxic or someone was not quite happy there or whatever. And instead of welcoming them to go find what makes them happy, we would sort of put up with you know, what we didn't need to put up with, and sort of try to persevere and try to keep that number and keep that person there. And And then in the end, it hurts you more than it does any good.
Yeah.
And now that we have that, we don't have that scarcity mentality, and we can sort of be like, look, if we tell our guys all the time, if they get to a point in their fight career, at any point they feel like it's not for them anymore, like there's a disconnect, there's, you know, something's happened where maybe our scheduling or what we're doing in training is not working for them, because we're not going to fit everyone all the time.
Mm.
And sometimes other people's life change, like maybe, you know, they get a partner or they have kids or work or things are different. If at any point Double Dose is not the right fit for them, then all we ask is a human adult conversation.
Yeah.
Let us know what's up. If we can't fix it, then cool. We'll actually help you try to find a gym, you know, and at least then we know you're going to another good trainer or someone that's going to look after you and someone that is a better fit for you. And then you can still do Muay Thai, like still be in the sport. Don't give it up. Go find somewhere that's a better fit. And we tell our guys that, so that if that way they know it's not like, oh, you know, if they don't force it to work, then basically they've got to stop training.
Mm. And then it's like, if you continue in an environment that's really not serving you anymore, it spirals to a point where you come to resent it. And as you say, you just go, you know what, fuck it, I don't want to do Muay Thai anymore. Whereas the alternative can be, look, this, as you say, this scheduling, this, you know, isn't really working with my new girlfriend and stuff like that. And yeah, maybe it's like, all right, that's probably not the environment. Environments change, but people have a strange kind of like not false loyalty, but an unnecessary like idea of loyalty to a gym where they almost feel like, and then maybe it's reinforced by some people are a bit controlling like that and they wouldn't be able to have that adult conversation. But as you say, like, you're not going to do yourself any good staying in an environment that's not great for you, and you're just going to let it go to the point where it explodes.
It's not great for them, it's not great for us, it's not great for the team,
like, and especially if they're fighting, like, it's dangerous, like
you want their head to be 100% but somewhere else they've got to find that, then that's got to be it, you know. You've got to do, even though that they're still fighting, they may not be your fighter anymore, you still got to do what's best for the fighter, you know.
And you can still, like, you can either have them look back and you can be part of their journey and something that they're grateful that you played a small role in, or you could be that like negative person that they had to leave, but it went bad and then awkward. You see them at fight shows and there's like,
You know, like, and that kind of shit is gross.
Yeah.
There's a lot of it around, but it's gross.
It's still way too small of a sport to have that stuff happen.
But I genuinely do still feel for the most part of that. It's like in Muay Thai, there are a lot of people that are incapable of just, and it's reinforced by, like, if you're a fighter and a lot of fighters move gyms, a lot of players in other sports change teams, a lot of environment, like it's something that happens, right? But like if you're a fighter and you move gym and you started just disappeared one day and started training with this other gym in secret, and then just one day you just text your old trainer like, oh, change of plan, I'm training somewhere else now, I cancel my membership. Yeah, you fucked it up.
Yeah.
Right? Like you maybe didn't, and you in retelling can be like, you know, I couldn't make it work there anymore. Going there didn't work with my new job. I was getting this out of work. Okay, there's probably a million good reasons why you moved gym, but your management of it makes you an asshole.
Yeah.
Because you're wasting the time that your trainers put into you and stuff like that. Because
and you're too scared. Yeah, to not owe them at least just a conversation and say, hey, I'm going to go do this. Like,
yeah.
You don't have to like it, but at least they had the conversation with you.
I find parents are probably the worst at it, to be honest. Like, you can spend so much time with someone's kid. I've actually had that happen to me. I found out that one of the kids that we trained to be a South Pacific champion went to New Zealand, everything. And then I found out then Monday after he won the title that he went to a different gym because his dad posted on social media him in his new outfit.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't really care. He's a kid, right? He's a young kid. He did really well. He became South Pacific champ, all that kind of fun stuff. And if he wanted to go to another gym, then good on him. But his dad should have just come and told me, like, you know, it's just.
It doesn't have to be a big drama, right? But you can make it a drama.
Yeah.
But it's a maturity thing more than anything, right? And just the sad things. A lot of people take things personally that they should. I think you guys, like in what you mentioned there, it's very mature. A lot of trainers are not like that. If someone says, I want to go and train somewhere else. Yeah, you're blacklisted. It's all fuck you and this. Whereas it's like really as a trainer and a business owner, if someone says, I'm not getting this and this, in some ways, sometimes people just leave. It has nothing to do with you and it's just what's best for them. But sometimes it's probably something you can listen to from it. Yeah. Oh, these are the reasons why. And you don't have to plead with them to stay, but you could go, okay, that's a consideration for me with people.
Yeah, definitely.
This is why. But if you're just going to be like, it's stubbornness, right? It's like, he's wrong and he's a traitor and I'm right and my gym's perfect, so fuck him.
We have people that used to train with us that are at different gyms now and they still come down for sparring.
Yeah.
It is what it is, you know. They're still, we've spent years together. You know, some people you spend 3 or 4 years with and they go somewhere else and it's only just up the road and they go, oh, can I still come down for sparring? Yeah, man, come down. This is still your team. Like, you spent 4 years
training with this
guy, man. Come on down. Come down. You're more than welcome whenever you want. As long as your new coach is okay with it, I don't care. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
And I think for us too, and another thing that's, I guess, we've learned from Brian is, like, the end goal should always be Muay Thai grows.
Muay Thai,
you know? And obviously, like, yeah, we want our bubble to grow. We want our gym to grow. We want our fight team to do well. But we love this sport, and so we want Muay Thai to grow as a whole. And if that means someone has to, you know, if someone's moving on from us, but we want them to continue and we can help make that happen so that they stay in the sport, then Muay Thai wins.
Mm.
And do you think it's like almost taking like more of a macro approach where you're like, if we all do work to grow Muay Thai collectively, we all grow by nature of Muay Thai being a bigger sport, where it's like maybe some people are a little bit like, if someone leaves my gym, that's one of a finite number of people that can potentially train at my gym that's going, like, they're really just thinking at that like micro sort of transactional growth level. Like, they're not thinking big picture, like, let's really blow this whole thing up.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. True. So we'll change gears slightly because I started talking shit like I always do. But I will get on to what I really wanted to hear about from you guys was the growth of Muay Thai League, like your guys' promotion. Is it 3 shows in now for you guys?
We've done 2. And so, yeah, we're ready for
the
3 coming up.
Yeah, 3 this year. One all-female card and 2 normal shows, yeah.
Yeah, so I would love to hear, because Muay Thai League, it's got quite an interesting, you're wearing the merch right now. Like, it got an interesting sort of, like, I remember when you guys, like, a very interesting kind of branding behind it. It's got that, quite similar to, like, we talked about, like, the Muay Thai Premier League, that American sports style branding. But you guys started doing, alongside the first show, launch some clothing and some training gear and stuff like that. So we'd love to hear just about kind of like the vision for Muay Thai League, how it all came together, and I guess what the future plans are, what's in the pipeline now.
Yeah, so, I mean, it started off, we were going to have it as sort of like a collective thing between fight gear and apparel and then a promotion as well. It's evolved now that we've done a couple of shows and we've actually sort of rethought this process, and now we're going to be pushing the event. And on the side, obviously, where you can buy gear and buy merch. So that's sort of become like a sidelined thing now. So we're still going to have shirts and gloves and stuff you can buy, and if you want to buy it, then that's cool. But if it's not going to be, we're not going to go pursue down the like competing with fight gear sort of route, largely because, you know, you've got your cow and twins and Fairtex and all of that doing their thing. And we just sort of like made that decision that instead of competing with brands like that are already out there, already doing really well, we'll still continue to supply some gear, but our efforts are better put into making the event bigger and better.
Yeah.
The branding, yeah, definitely. That's sort of like, it, I guess, taking back from the our time in America a bit, and when we chose Muay Thai League, and then it sort of came about that we crafted this up last Christmas, like not the one just gone, the one before.
Yeah,
we're on holiday.
We're on holidays, and we come up with it all.
We figured it out.
Never stop, eh? Just keep going.
And then the show names actually have been after baseball terminology as well.
Yeah,
we've sort of stuck with that. The future of Muay Thai League, we'll still always have merch and stuff, but it's not going to be one of its main focuses. it'll be the event, and then media as well. Like, we really want to get into more like wider coverage of Muay Thai in general in Australia.
How do you see that kind of coming together? What do you see sort of going into that?
So our video production girl, Lorna, she does all of our marketing, all of our video marketing. And
that's Lorna, former fighter, Lorna. Yeah, I've seen her fight a couple of times. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, so, and she's amazing.
Awesome.
We're trying to get her out of retirement. She doesn't, she hasn't committed yet, but we'll make
Lorna, if you're listening to this, MTL in May.
Which you should be.
So she's an absolutely genius behind the camera. And so we've just basically increased her workload now, and we're going to try to do some more. So more coverage when we haven't got an event coming up. Obviously, when we do have an event coming up, it'll be very much around fighters that are featuring on the event.
Yeah.
But outside of that, we'd like to just get a bit more coverage of fighters in Australia through video, through interviews and stuff like that, just through any kind of media form that we can, just to, bring a little bit more. We'd like to try to get just a bit more publicity for some fighters, especially ones in Queensland, if we can, that maybe people that aren't following the sport already can latch onto. So once again, goal is always, Muay Thai growing. So we're always trying to brainstorm ways we can sort of help make that happen and bring more people's attention to the sport that maybe otherwise don't know about it.
Yeah. And it's like to even come back to where we started talking about that period of time that you guys were in the States, there was some like a great stable of fighters, like the Can't Stop Crazy sort of team. And like what I always found so cool about that story is what those guys did. And one of the reasons, obviously they were spectacularly talented fighters, one, but like, there's a lot of spectacularly talented fighters fighting with three people watching, right? It's like kind of what they did was they got together and started doing their own videos and their own kind of storytelling things. Like, they were backing this themselves, and just like, you have to kind of package and distribute the storytelling part, and that's what people are into, and that's kind of what Muay Thai has not had for a long time. I think one of the reasons our Muay Thai community is so cool is that it's a bunch of people who love the art, and that's what they show up to see. But that is not scalable, is that like, you're not just going to go up to someone on the street, just a general sports fan or a combat sports fan, and be like, oh, come and see this fight. It's one of Australia's best kickers fighting, one of Australia's best boxers. It's a really interesting match. They'll be like, yeah. But like, if you can show them some footage and some interviews, and like, there's a lot of cool characters in Australian Muay Thai. There's a lot of cool people, a lot of good people to listen to, that if you let them speak a little bit, tell their story. And like, I was talking to Matt Lucas about this yesterday, actually, about how in a sport where virtually everyone has a 9-to-5, there's a lot of side stories that like you don't really hear about that are quite cool and really make for a compelling kind of, or just if it's running a gym or something, like there's a lot of people that have a lot to say that can really make you. That's what people will show up to a fight to see, is a character that they've kind of attached themselves to or related to in some way. And people do talk about, Muay Thai is not as big as other combat sports because it doesn't have the shit talk and stuff like that. And I don't exactly think it's that. No. I think it's just the character building. It doesn't have to be people calling each other's mums fat. It can just be, who are these people? Like, it's, there's only so much fighter A versus fighter B that a general crowd can watch. And that's like we say, a really successful fighter is one that sells a lot of tickets, and he sells a lot of tickets because he has a big network of people that care about his or her fight, not like, there's not people just showing up. You need to create that kind of fan culture a little bit.
That's, you definitely hit it on the head. And like, I think one thing I've learned as becoming a promoter is I get to know these fighters now on another level when I'm booking them fights and talking to them about talking to them at the events and stuff like that. And I think, man, there are so many cool people. And like, even just like some fighters that you find out that they've got a couple of kids and you look at them, you think you'd never thought that they were a parent. Like you just forget they're another person outside of fighting. And yeah, you're exactly right. Like that, when I think about what fighters I've followed and what draws me to them, a lot of the time it is that character or that story they've got, or there's something relatable to you that makes you sort of attach onto them. And there's so many out there that just aren't getting that exposure. Like we don't, apart from the talent they show in the ring, we don't know really anything about them.
And it's kind of like the sad thing is that that talent in the ring only gets you so far. Like it's a prerequisite. You need it if you're going to succeed. In-ring success is number one, but how are you getting more people into the house or onto the live stream to see you show?
Yeah.
You know, if you're that talented in the ring, it's a shame if no one's going to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like some people know how to work their own social medias and there's so many that don't. Like a lot of them are like, I don't know, I'm a fighter. I don't know how to say this or that, or they don't think they've got anything to say, but then you find out they don't know how to do it themselves. So bringing that.
And it's a humility thing, right? Like people are like, oh, I don't have a story. It's like, man, fighting is cool.
Yeah.
Like being a fighter and having a job during the day, like if you're at work doing a 9-to-5, doing whatever you do, you're a mechanic or a carpenter, and then after that you put the tools down and you go and train for hours, and then on the weekend you fight. That's a story. That's a story to tell. Yeah. That's something to say. And it's cool. Like we forget because we're right in the thick of it that like at even just a baseline, it's cool. Like you don't have to be an especially cool fighter. Being a fighter is just cool on its own.
Yeah.
You decide to like spend your spare time for free. Like this isn't, you know, it costs people money. It's not definitely not something people are profiting off. And then, you know, you get punched in the face for fun.
And so we'll get onto like what's coming up this year that we're talking about. You've got a big all female card. In the pipeline. So tell me a little bit about what's getting put together for that. It's been a while since we've seen an all-female show. As we're saying, I don't really think there's been an all-female card or a big all-female card in a show since the Dynamite series, which was awesome. I had you fought on that, did you?
So I think they did two shows from memory. Yeah. I fought on the first one, and like that was it was such an awesome concept, and I think like those guys did a great job. It's a shame that they didn't keep doing it.
And Naman Barlow versus Yolanda is one of the biggest domestic fights that we've had in the last decade or so, I'd have to say, given the caliber and stuff like that. Like they really invested in, and that was an awesome fight.
That was
one of my favorite fights that year.
So
what's kind of on the cards for the all-female lineup?
Yeah, so Nicole Bainey, she retired after her last fight on MTL and she's actually partnering up with us for this one, so she's going to be co-promoting it. She wants to give back to the sport now that she's retired from fighting, wants to give back in other ways and get involved and help continue to grow Muay Thai in other ways.
Love that.
So I put it to where I already had this sort of all-female card idea in, and I thought it's right down her alley because she's really big on one thing I noticed about Nicole as her career sort of built up was she changed the game a little bit in really being inspirational. She lifts women up, she talks really good about everybody. She works so hard. You can see, you know, just by the look of her, how hard she trains and how much work she puts in. And what I really actually noticed a shift in female fighters looking out for each other and supporting each other rather than being in competition with each other. And so I think she's like a perfect face for that. Also a good friend of mine as well. So we sort of teamed up and I said, like, I've got this idea. You want to come on board with me and let's do this show. And then another big part behind that is I've decided to fight on it as well. So.
Yeah. Just because you don't have much going on, you might as well.
Just to add
something to keep you busy, right? Yeah.
Yeah, we're just sitting around doing nothing. So I knew I was going to get back in the ring soon. So I thought, well, like the best way to do it, I guess, is my own show. I'm just excited to do that. So Nicole's going to be co-promoting it. So she'll be behind the scenes helping make that come to life. With Benji, and then I'll be doing that as well, as but taking a little bit of a seat back, I guess, as much as I can, especially as it gets closer, so that I can concentrate on the fight.
And how has been all the return to training, stuff like that? Just feeling kind of excited. It's been a bit of a different experience. How's it feeling at this point? Yeah,
so it's been really good. I'm training 100% on a double dose now. So previous to baby, I was part training at Strikeforce at PZ.
Strikeforce, yeah.
And if I was going to do any part training still, I would still do it there. But timing wise, we just don't have the time to
keep. Yeah.
Well, I used to do it because my, you know, the other kid was a bit older. It was a bit easier to move the house and do the commute. So now with little bubs, not so easy to make that happen. But our team's really strong at double dose, and Benj and I have just been spending like the last few months really drilling down on working together now that he's going to be my only trainer. So because the fight's still another 12 weeks away, we've had time to really just get used to each other as, you know, okay, this is like our student trainer relationship outside of personal relationship. And it's been really good. It's been really a really new thing for us. I always liked having that external trainer to be able to sort of cut myself off from work or personal life and be okay, like, I'm just a fighter now, I'm just here to train. So it's been a new experience to sort of adapt how to turn that thinking off while I'm still at double dose.
Yeah.
But it's been going really well, and we're working really good together. So it's going to be an exciting time.
I am
coming back to fighting with like a bit of a different mindset. I'm not interested so much in travel now. I don't want to go and win a world title. Like I'm happy with my career and what I've done. But I'm not done fighting as far as like, there's still stuff in the ring that I want to execute. There's still personal things that I want to accomplish inside the ring and performance wise. And I want to fight more with my, you know, with our team being so strong as well, like going through camps with them is like, feels really good. And also like there's a couple of girls out there that I still know I want to fight. There's some memories I sort of want to have still, which is good because it's a nice, there's no pressure. Like I'm not fighting for, I need to win this belt or I need to get to this point in my career. Like I'm super happy with where my career has gone and what I've done in the sport. Now I'm just like here for the good times and
doing it for the love.
Doing it for the love. So it's actually been the first time I've kind of had that. Like I'm excited for what that feels like coming into the fight.
Less pressure.
Yeah.
It's good.
I like that. Yeah. And doing it for the love is good, right? Because if you do it for the money, you're bound to be disappointed. But if you do it for the love, you can get what you want.
Yeah, definitely disappointed.
That's for sure. But I'm excited. And like, so I'll be fighting for the WBC Australian title. And like, that's awesome. Like it was a really good window of opportunity there because my Queensland title's basically was expiring now. So that next jump to the Australian title was there with a credible opponent. So it was really good timing, but at the same time, it's not about that. So it's like, it's a cool, nice, little shiny object, but it's not at all why I'm doing it. And we looked at a couple of possibilities, but then ended up booking Joanne Lahr. And great fight. Great fight. Like I really rate her. I've always really admired her style. She's super strong. I know she's going to be like a big challenge for me. And I think what I like about that is I notice this in sparring. Every time I spar someone that's dangerous and that's high level, it lifts my game. Like
absolutely,
I've got to focus because otherwise I'm going to get hurt. And I feel like that is what Joanne will bring out of me. Like she's in no way an easy fight. She's strong. She's got a good style. She's got good structure. And I think we will bring the best out of each other because neither one of us is going to come there with, you know, not ready to put on a good show.
Absolutely. I'm really excited for that fight. I know a lot of the Australian Muay Thai community will be. Probably no one's more excited than yourself, Nadia, but I can't wait to watch. Guys, I know you got a stack going on, so I really appreciate you making the time. I really enjoyed this chat. Hopefully you can stay close to what you guys are doing and stay in touch with Muay Thai League and stuff like that. I love what you're doing up there. Why don't you tell the listeners who aren't following you yet where they can find you guys individually, the gym, the show, everything else that you've got going on, how they can keep up?
Yeah, we've got all the normal social media accounts. So yeah. Double Dose Muay Thai Australia for the gym stuff. And then Muay Thai League is it on Instagram and Facebook. Definitely follow that. We're going to got some good media stuff coming up, some good coverage, and hopefully
some big announcements for the May show.
Yeah, got good exciting things under the works for a big team in May. So that'll be, we can't let any of it out yet, but
not yet.
We
will though soon.
Some big fights coming up. And yeah, just keep covering the sport and keep trying to help grow Muay Thai in any little way we can.
Love it. That's kind of my motivation too. So it's good to have conversations with people like you. I think we're all fighting the same fight.
Yeah.
Thank you everyone once again for tuning in. We are available on all audio platforms, iTunes, Spotify, anywhere you can find a podcast. You can find us, subscribe to us on YouTube. Please leave us a thumbs up, a comment, tell your friends. Thank you as always to our sponsors, Warriors of the Moncon. Speaking of Muay Thai media, they have a stack coming out on the Instagram and Facebook as well, and it's always great work, so jump on and have a look at that. A lot of exciting things going on in Muay Thai. Thank you very much, Saki Benji. I'll let you get back to this chaos that you're in the middle of up there. Take care of yourselves, and stoked to talk to you again soon. And really looking forward to the next Muay Thai League.
Awesome, man. Thanks for having us.
Cheers, guys.
See ya.
Thanks again for listening to the Combat Chat Podcast. You can catch all episodes on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, and all other podcast platforms. Be sure to like, subscribe, and share. Follow your boys on Instagram, Facebook, at Combat Chat Podcast. See you next week.